Our next case for argument is Furry against the United States. Mr. Ratzak.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Michael Ratzak. I'm here on behalf of the plaintiffs' appellants in this case. Sometimes the simplest argument to make is the hardest to make, and I may have to prove that here right now. The issue here is very, very simple. It's a very simple little factual matter. The question was, who caused this accident? The district court said the plaintiff did not prove whether it was us or them. Our point is simply that under the very simple facts of this case and looking at those photos that are in our appendix, it could not have been us because our car could not have been the one to put that damage to.
No, it could not have been. Why didn't you engage an accident reconstruction specialist?
And that's the government's position, of course. They said my theories were head-scratching, and my response is quite simple because at some point common sense should overtake us.
The problem. Often accidents occur in a way that does not comport with common sense.
Yes, sir.
That's why there is a specialty known as accident reconstruction. If we just relied on common sense, if we relied on common sense, I assume we'd be treating diseases with herbs and grasses.
We would, and none of it being effective. The point in this case, however, is that the facts are so incredibly simple.
But apparently they weren't. I mean, you know, the district court rests its decision, the final analysis, on burden of proof. You know, the burden of proof is, of course, on the plaintiff to show how this happened. The conditions were bad those days, raining heavily. The truck, even if it was still, was jutting out a bit. An accident reconstruction expert could have looked at where the scrapes were, could have concluded with much greater expert certainty whether the truck was in motion at the time this happened or not. Frankly, you know, I've looked at your pictures, and I have to say, the other thing, if this was really a $45 million case, I don't see why it wasn't worth investing in an accident reconstruction expert just to nail it down, even if you thought common sense was on your side.
The answer to that is that there are some instances where there are not enough facts upon which an expert can base an opinion, so that an expert coming into court as an engineer.
That's kind of a problem then. If you have an expert that can't make the call, I mean, that should be a big signal to you about whether or not it's clear what your view is. And Judge Manning had a couple other alternatives that she even suggested could have been the cause of the accident. I mean, if you can't get an expert to say it, then you have a big problem. I mean a credible expert that looks at the facts and then can reconstruct. And if you're saying that the reason you didn't was because they couldn't come up with an opinion, that's a problem. I don't know how you expect the court to do that.
As Judge Easterbrook was, of course, suggesting, there are instances where a reconstruction expert can recreate the accident, but he's only or she's only allowed to do that when that expert reconstruction person has got to use knowledge beyond the ken of the jurors. The problem in this case is we can get an expert to say it.
How many jurors know Newton's first law? You cite, without attribution, Newton's first law in your brief, but people who understand acceleration, motion, spin, you know, skidding, et cetera, are able to come to some. In fact, I'm reminded of my cousin Vinny. I'm sorry, but
it's quite
possible to come to much better conclusions than those of a person who's sitting in a car and is jolted by an accident, not in the best position to observe. An expert adds considerable value to the case, and indeed is usually, I would say, in these cases, necessary to push this over the halfway point.
That would only be the case if the expert needs to apply his or her expertise to reach that conclusion. In this situation, my point is that an expert, we had an expert in this case. The problem is that the expert can't use any logic other than what I used in my brief with the court. The expert does not have to apply advanced technological engineering principles because there isn't enough evidence.
That's what you say, but until we have the results of an expert, we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
You're just assuming that what experts in accidents use is lawyers' common sense. And I hope they do more than that. I hope the experts do more than just repeat what the lawyers tell them.
They do, except that we do have cases where the courts have exercised the gatekeeping function and saying, that's not beyond the ken of the jurors. You don't get to use it, expert.
Jury in a Tort Claims Act case, the judge is the trier of fact, and, of course, the judge has ruled against you. So you're way behind the eight ball once the judge says, you know, this is really inscrutable.
And
the party with the burden of proof loses.
And your Honor's reasoning is correct so long as the district court's decision that she could not reach a decision without expert testimony is correct. And our position is simply it's not correct. As you drive past something, you can't hit the far side of what you're driving past. That's such a simple point.
The problem is if the district court clearly didn't buy what you were selling, and so you didn't have any fallback position. There's no direct evidence. There's no circumstantial evidence. What experts can help you do is to construct things as they might have been based on their expertise. So, you don't have anything.
That's
the bottom line.
They can only reconstruct it based on their expertise, and if there's not sufficient information for an expert to look at and use expertise other than what I have called the high school science class idea of you can't hit something on the backside and damage the front, that expertise is not something that any district court judge is going to allow to come before a jury. And there are cases where you simply don't use experts because their expertise does not come into play because the issue is so simple. If this court does not think this issue is simple, then I have a serious problem here.
Well, you have a serious problem.
And I have a serious problem
right.
here.
That's true. You picked up on that.
Even on a bad day, I can see which way the river is moving. And I can add very little to the concept that, and it seems like such a common sense concept, that I would be able, if this was a jury case, just say, look, if I hit here, how do I get a scratch on the front end when the vehicle, arguably under the defense theory, was in fact going past? It's going past, even if the vehicle going past is sliding over, something that no one showed could have occurred. Your vehicle does not suddenly move to the right, not unless you do something to it and there's no evidence. As it's going past, it may hit this car and it may damage it, but how does it ever get to the front end of that vehicle? The government can't explain how it could happen. I looked at the other side to say, this is why you need an expert.
I mean, do you get what burden of proof is? The government doesn't have to explain.
Not at all, Your
Honor.
They
don't have the burden. You have the burden. And you only have a 51% burden.
And that's not
proof beyond a reasonable doubt.
At all. But what I'm saying is that what I believe is a very simple explanation of how this happened and why it could not have happened the way the government said it did has not been explained away by the government with expert testimony or using common sense. If it's not common sense, if I'm wrong on my common sense argument, someone on that side should be able to say, this is how you get scratches on the front end of something that's not in the direction in which your vehicle is moving. And they can't do that. I'm not suggesting that any burden is shifted. Of course it doesn't shift. Other than that our case rests upon what the court thinks when it looks at those pictures and our belief that you can't damage the front when you hit the rear. That's all. Unless there are further questions, obviously we ask for judgment on liability and remand. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Certainly, counsel. Mr. Kuhn.
May it please the court, counsel. This was a very simple issue at
trial. Mr. Kuhn, I have two questions for you about this case. One of them is... relates to Diane Nye's testimony that Mr. Williams actually admitted hitting the plaintiff's car immediately after the accident. He said, I'm sorry for hitting you. So why isn't that the kind of evidence that the district court should have but did not take into account?
I think the district court took into account all of
She never says he admitted hitting her. That's hitting them. That's quite a different thing from worrying about the way a car is going to slide on a rainy road.
Right. Well, at that point when Mr. Williams came out, there was a collision. And it
he said, I'm sorry for hitting you. He didn't say, I'm sorry that you hit me. That would be a different sentence.
Right. And as Mr. Williams testified in his deposition, he did feel as though he had some fault for the accident for two reasons. One, because of the way the vehicle was parked with the left bumper jutting out into the roadway some. And second, because he was off of his route and where he shouldn't have been.
I understand he's feeling all guilty about that, which takes me to the other thing about the district court's approach to this that concerns me. She makes the statement in her opinion that because Mr. Williams's testimony comes in by deposition, she can't make a credibility determination. And I wondered when Rule 32 got deleted from the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure, because Rule 32 is all about using depositions in court proceedings. Depositions are used all the time, and district courts make credibility determinations based on the deponent's testimony. They're used at trial and also in hearings. And I think the district court was just flat wrong to say, well, I'm going to write off everything Mr. Williams said because I can't make a credibility determination.
I don't think that she wrote off everything Mr. Williams said. She said she did not have the ability to gauge his testimony as she would had it been live.
No, she made a stronger statement than that. And that's why I'm concerned about it. She says, plaintiffs contend Williams is incredible. However, as discussed above, the court had no opportunity to gauge his credibility for itself. And then seems to just disregard the whole thing, which is surely an error.
But she says at the end of the opinion that she doesn't have to rely on his credibility to find that the plaintiffs did not meet their burden to show.
Well, suppose she had credited Williams saying, "I'm sorry for hitting you." Would it be accurate to say at that point that the plaintiffs don't have enough evidence to show that Williams hit them?
I would say yes, because I don't think that Mr. Williams, Mrs. Nye's relation to Mr. Williams' statement is an admission that he was at fault, that he would be at fault in the accident applying a legal principle.
Well, but the question has been, was the truck in motion, did he hit them, or did they swerve over and somehow in some bizarre way make contact with the front of the postal truck? I just feel that her addressing the evidence has one flaw based on Rule 32 and another flaw based on the utter lack of discussion that there was more evidence than she seemed to think. I mean, there's the evidence of their perceptions that they were hit. There's the evidence of Williams saying, "I'm sorry I hit you." I mean, this is not quite the case the district court portrays.
But there was also evidence of Mr. Williams saying that my vehicle didn't move and that he didn't hit them, and she considered it in its entirety and applied all the evidence.
The problem is she didn't explain away or how she viewed that statement that he made that it was his fault. That was not explained. You know, how she put that in the whole sphere of all the evidence that she considered. And when you couple that with the lack in the of not using the deposition testimony, which really spoke to a lot of these issues, I mean, that's where the problem is.
We think that she did consider the deposition testimony. She never said that she did not credit Mr. Williams. And she
but
never
she
specifically
doesn't say
credit
she does either. She basically says this is all worthless because it's deposition testimony, and she thinks the only thing that's been established is that there was an encounter between the station wagon and the postal vehicle, which, of course, everybody knows there was. She doesn't grapple with anything.
Well, I think she was addressing the arguments made by the plaintiffs that Mr. Williams was not credible. And she said, "Well, wait a minute. You didn't bring him in here. I gave you the opportunity. I said I would enforce the subpoena. I said you go find him and we'll bring him in as a live witness. And you said no. Now, because of that, I cannot gauge his testimony as a live witness."
But she never made a ruling that this was an improper Rule 32 use of deposition. The parties had stipulated for the deposition. You're not saying that there's no ability to use depositions at trial.
No.
I bet you do it a lot, too.
But the fact that she didn't make said she couldn't make credibility findings if she would like testimony.
And that's just wrong. I mean, your entire law practice would be different in civil trials if from now on, every time you use deposition, you know that the district court's not going to make a credibility determination.
Well,
that's crazy.
We think implicitly she did, because she found that the plaintiffs didn't prove the postal truck was moving.
I can't tell. That's your theory. We have this great silence from her. We don't know whether she disregarded the whole thing because it was a deposition, whether she made the credibility determinations in your favor. She seems to have think that the only evidence in front of her was that there was a collision, and there's nothing to tell who hit whom. And we do have things. I mean, it's an incomplete discussion.
I think she does say there was other evidence, but she said based upon that, she was unable to determine who struck whom. I don't think she ever discounted any of that test. In fact, but the only credibility finding she does make is the plaintiff's testimony that there was, in fact, a collision. That was the only explicit credibility finding that she made.
Do you have any authority for her statement? Because I can't imagine it exists, that she can't take that into account, deposition testimony?
I think she can, and she did. I think she did take
How
it
do you
in,
know?
Into account.
But see, she doesn't say that explicitly. She doesn't make reference to it. She just doesn't make reference to it. She just says, I can't take it into account.
But what Mr. Williams' deposition testimony was the vehicle didn't move, and they drove into me. That was the testimony that was in favor.
And there's also the testimony that he says, I'm sorry, I hit you.
Well, if that was what Ms. Nye testified to, then the district judge was able to observe her demeanor, make a credibility finding.
And we don't know anything about that.
She doesn't talk about that.
Maybe the district court thought that wasn't an admission. That would have been wrong.
Well, the district court...
evidentiary. I don't mean Rule 36. I just mean evidentiary.
The district court found there were two permissible views of the evidence, and she went with one of them. And that is not that cannot be clearly erroneous. I do want to mention one thing when it's arguing about the scrape on the front of the bumper. That's a disingenuous argument. The transcript at page 456... The postal supervisor testifies how there were 31 of these vehicles at the Burn Post Office, and all of their bumpers are scraped up. These things are used all the time, every day, and they come in contact with things all the time. There was no evidence that this scrape on the front of the bumper came from this particular accident. And if there are no other questions, I ask you to affirm the district court.
Thank you, Mr. Kuhn. Anything further, Mr. Rathsack?
Unless Your Honors have further questions raised by that examination, I have nothing to add to what I said.
Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement.